Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in South Central Iowa and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA and KRLS. Now with today's In-Depth, here's Dr. Bob Leonard.
How are our insects doing? Let's go in-depth with Donna Lewis, professor of entomology at Iowa State University. Professor Lewis, how are you this morning?
Doing great. I'm enjoying the late summer weather, even though it's hotter than I would like, but that's a good year for insects, isn't it?
It sure is I don't know about good year. It's been a really interesting year. And you're sitting on your front porch on a hot morning, and you must be, are you watching the insects, the birds? I think this is the first interview I've ever had with somebody on a front porch.
Well, I just came out to see how the weather was and brought my coffee with me and sat down, and then you called. So I haven't gotten around to looking for many insects yet this morning, though we are doing a replacement project on the back of our house where some steps had gotten moisture inside. And of course, when moisture gets inside wood, that leads to wood decay. And that is where carpenter ants prefer to nest. So during this remodeling project, I've had a good experience watching what carpenter ants do. And so I have learned again the role of carpenter ants in chewing up and spitting out decayed wood. So lots going on and lots to see in the natural world.
Well, and they're social creatures, right?
The carpenter ants, yes, are. Almost all of our ants are the ones that nest in the ground, the ones that nest in our trees. They are social. That is, there's a queen and there are workers. The division of labor is a characteristic of social insects. There are those that work. There are those that reproduce, and they don't get to switch jobs. They have a job for their entire life. As you tear into a carpenter ant nest, as I have done with some decayed steps on the back porch, there's an interesting behavior, and that is the carpenter ant workers all grab a pupa and take off. They scurry away carrying one pupa. Now, a reminder that ants are like butterflies and beetles. They have a complete life cycle of four stages: egg, larva, pupa, and adult. So the queen has laid the eggs. The workers have fed the larvae till they can grow. And then the larvae encase themselves in a flimsy little cocoon and transform to the pupa, where the metamorphosis to the adult stage will occur. A worker grabbing a pupa is taking a near adult with it, hoping to save the colony by saving itself and saving one other worker that's not yet emerged. So it's kind of an interesting behavior to watch them each grab a pupa and scurry away. I don't know where they go. They hope to regroup somewhere else, but by tearing out the board and throwing it away, we've pretty much ruined their nesting site.
It's pretty interesting. It's almost like they understand the urgency of the moment by speeding away.
Well, they are disrupted. They are threatened. Light and air have been brought into the moist, dark cavity where they were chewing out wood and spitting it away. They can't eat wood. They turn it into sawdust and spit it out. And where the workers were foraging for food and raising the queen's offspring, when light and air are introduced, they are definitely threatened. To me, the almost intelligent behavior is to grab a pupa. If you took a larva, you would have to feed it before it would transform to a worker and could help you. But by taking a pupa, they're taking one that's almost an adult, almost ready to go to work, almost ready to help you.
More in depth after this.
I continued my conversation with Donald Lewis, professor of entomology at Iowa State University. Well, if they don't eat the wood, then why are they chewing at it?
Oh, it's just a convenient nesting site. Whether it's a hollow tree, a piece of firewood, an old log on the ground, that moist wood is a great place to just chew up and make galleries and chambers and tunnels. Think of it as if you had to create a shelter for yourself, for your colony, with nothing but your teeth to do the work, you would probably try to chew into something soft. And that is the description of decayed wood. When moisture gets into our windowsills, our stairs, when it gets into our stair steps, when it gets into logs on the ground, fungi begin to decay that wood, and that makes the wood soft. And if you've ever felt decayed wood, you know you can crumble it with your hands. You can dig it apart with your fingernails. And the ants are chewing out that decayed, soft wood with their mandibles. They're chewing a place to live, a place to have their colony in the softest material available to them. So it works well for carpenter ants.
Pretty amazing. One of the things I wanted to ask you about today was it's been sort of an odd year, it seems to me, in terms of watching the insects. It's been sort of different, and you can tell me if I'm mistaken. One of the things I want to make sure that we get to is flies. It's like a few weeks ago, it was just, you know, fly city, flies everywhere. I don't think I've ever seen so many flies. Was that restricted to, oh, my neighborhood, or was it something else going on?
Flies are interesting in that we know a lot about them, but particularly it seems in north central areas of the state, there will be these spring and early summer emergences of huge populations of flies. The problem is we have not tracked down the source. We know that flies, and most of the ones we have seen as sent in as samples are the ones we collected over the years, most of them are house flies. They're the typical, little less than a quarter inch, sort of grayish color, two wings, some stripes on the thorax, but the house flies all develop in wet, decaying organic matter. Now that could be garbage in the bottom of your waste basket. It could be wet organic matter, like wet soil. So there's lots of places these can come from, and we know flies have a complete life cycle also, four stages, egg, larva, pupa, and adult. And the mystery for many of these fly emergences is where are those larvae developing in wet organic matter? Now, once the larvae develop, they leave that organic matter to pupate, the pupa transforms to the adult fly, and then they scatter, they go miles, so then they're carried on the wind and go even farther. Well, wet soil appears to be one of the major sources, and as we think of some of the low-lying areas, some of the old prairie potholes around the state, when we think of some of the swampy, marshy areas, some of the roadside ditches that remain moist, there's just lots and lots of places where these flies can reproduce and develop, and they have a generation, and that seems to be it for a while, and then there's another generation. So even though we know a lot about insects, often there are mysteries and huge fly numbers that don't appear to have a source is one of the mysteries we have struggled with now for many, many years.
Well, you may have just explained it. Now I'm remembering that it was before a 4th of July little party we were having, and I moved the firewood so I could mow closer. And so maybe I did stir up the flies. My wife said that was the cause, but I sought to blame just other phenomenon that I didn't know about, but I probably did it by moving the firewood.
Oh, I don't think it's that local. I think when you're talking these huge populations of flies, you're talking about the flies that are produced in the county or the flies that are produced in the region. And flies are hugely mobile. You don't have to grow your own. Even if you had no fly maggots on your property, even if you hadn't raised any flies, they would still come and the wind would blow them in from somewhere else in the county. So I don't think you're to blame, and I doubt that your firewood is the source, but there could be small numbers there, but we're talking huge numbers of flies, which means huge areas of reproduction. And the problem is probably bigger than any one of us. And so don't beat yourself up. I don't think you're responsible for the fly problem.
Okay, well, good. That's good to know.
More in depth after this.
I continued my conversation with Donald Lewis, professor of entomology at Iowa State University. One of the things I always want to ask you is, how are our bees doing?
So-so. And when you talk about bees, most people think of honeybees. They were European immigrants back in the 1400s. What we call the honeybee was brought to the North American continent. It is not a native species. But there are 4,000 species of bees in North America. And the one that we always talk about is the honeybee, because it is the one that we can manage. It is the one we can manipulate. We can box them up. We can raise them in boxes. And when we want the box in an apple orchard, we move the box over there. And then when we don't want the bees in the apple orchard because we have to spray, we take the bees out. This ability to move and manipulate honeybees has made them critical for pollination services. And pollination services, where a beekeeper rents the beehive for a short period of time to provide pollination in apples, in vegetables, in almonds of California. We have Iowans who truck their bees to California in February so that they can pollinate the orchards out there. That pollination service is worth as much as the honey that bees produce. So honeybees are the workhorse of pollination services, and they are holding their own. The number of hives in the United States has increased slightly. The number of beekeepers has gone down slightly, but the number of beehives has gone up. So they're holding their own, but they are definitely challenged by the three Ps. Bees in Iowa have a poor diet. Corn and soybeans can serve as pollen for bees, but it's a poor nutritional material. They also suffer from parasites. There are mites that live on the bees, and the beekeepers must use a pesticide in the beehive to kill the parasites that are sucking the life out of the honeybees. And of course, the third P in the challenges for honeybees are pesticides, that as they do travel the environment, they run into pesticides that are used in the fields or in our gardens. So bees are challenged, but the honeybees are holding their own. Less well known is what's happening to the native bees. And these are small, shiny bees that many people would refer to as sweat bees. And there are thousands and thousands of those in North America. We've documented over 300 species of these sweat bees or native solitary bees in Iowa. And we really don't know what's happening to them, but we know they face the same challenges. Poor diet, lack of diversity of food, lack of floral resources throughout the summer. They may have a lot to eat at one time of the year, but then there won't be flowers for a while. So our monocultures of corn and soybeans are challenging all the species of bees in the state, but people are paying more attention, and that's a good thing.
You know, most people don't notice the insect world unless they're a bother, but one of the things that I've always enjoyed, especially when there are little kids around, are the surprise insects that you don't often see, the walking sticks, the praying mantises, the giant moths. Those are just delightful treasures we all enjoy, I think.
You've named several. I would add monarch butterfly to that group. There's a term for these. We call them charismatic megafauna. That is, people know what they are. People are interested in them. People can recognize it. Not many people would not recognize a monarch butterfly if it landed in their flower garden. And those others, the walking sticks, the praying mantis, they are well known. And because of that, we sort of use them as critters of interest. here, come look at this walking stick. Now, do you know that the walking sticks are slightly related to the grasshoppers, and the grasshoppers are related to the crickets? And, oh, by the way, did you hear the katydids singing in your trees last night, just after dusk? So there are these introductory organisms that give us a door into that natural world, and especially children will walk through that door with you if you just take a little time and show them the insects, talk about the benefits of insects. I think we end up doing, we end up scaring kids by saying, oh, don't touch that bug, it might kill you, it might hurt you. There aren't many insects out there that can kill you. Wasps and bees, if you're allergic, would be one example. But the interest is there if we just foster it. And you've named great species that everybody should recognize and look for and enjoy when they have the opportunity.
And as you sit on your porch, as we close this interview, what are you going to be looking for? Or are you just insects so much part of your life that you don't take a special moment to try to, look for a particular species?
Later, when the sun comes up over the neighbor's trees that shade my backyard for about half of the day, I'll be watching the butterflies. We've had some swallowtails, some eastern tiger swallowtails. We've had some giant swallowtails. I don't get a lot of monarchs in my backyard, but I'll be watching for them. I'll be looking for more carpenter ant nests as we continue this remodeling project. But I'll also be enjoying the singing insects. Later today, the annual cicadas will start buzzing with their zzz, zzz, zzz sound that the males make in the trees. Then as the sun goes down, the katydids will start singing their katydid-did, katydid-did song. Those are things that I'm going to notice. But one of the things that I'm always also going to go out and monitor are the Japanese beetles. Japanese beetles are a threat to many of our flowering trees and shrubs, our vegetables, our fruits, they just feed on almost everything, grapes, for example. And the population was low this year, and I'm going to continue to watch Japanese beetle numbers in my neighborhood. There's some trees that I watch and some of the neighbor's flowers that I watch to sort of document, when did they arrive, how bad were they, when do they disappear? And that helps me answer questions when people call and say, what's with the Japanese beetles this year? I can tell them it's highly variable, but in my neighborhood, this is what I noticed. So I'll enjoy the beneficial insects, but I'll also be out looking for some pests.
Thanks to Professor Donald Lewis for contributing to the program.
For KNIA KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
An audio copy of today's in-depth program is available at KNIAKRLS.com on demand or for download. Just click podcasts. If you have topics or show ideas you'd like to hear in depth, contact KNIAKRLS by sending an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's local news and the number one news and information source in South Central Iowa is KNIAKRLS.